Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by high-caliber millwrights, this is The Bald-Faced Truth.
All right, welcome back. I'm in studio now with Jimmy Pardo, comedian, Helium Comedy Club, Friday and Saturday night. That's tonight and tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10 o'clock. My microphone fell apart right when we were starting the segment. Bobby, look what's going on over here. I got to hold this
thing. What'd you do?
I literally pulled it forward and it unscrewed, but it'll screw back in. Jimmy, welcome, man. Classy place we have here.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. This is the second interview that I've done today where the microphone broke. Remember that, Nick, earlier? So it may be me. It may be like a fire starter sort of thing. Yeah, I come now the cord is twisting.
Yeah, we'll live. Welcome to Portland, man.
It's good to be here.
You've been here a lot, or is this a new...
I used to... I was the spokesman for Lloyd Center for years.
Really?
Back from 96 to 2001, I believe it was.
What is a spokesman of Lloyd Center
do? You know, I played a character called Lloyd, and I would walk around, and all the commercials were, I'm Lloyd, and this is my food court, or I'm Lloyd, and here's what's happening back to school.
Yeah.
And I would... it was great. They would just follow me around with a camera. I would improvise with customers and people, and as long as I hit the bullet points of what's the sale, what are the sale dates, blah, blah, then they would edit them together and make these great commercials.
Were you the spokesperson for like malls all over the place, or just Lloyd?
I just did Lloyd's, and then the same ad firm, also a client was down in Tampa, and so I ended up doing one series of mall ads for a mall in Tampa. The big one is getting bigger. I don't know. I remember the name of the mall. University Mall, the big one, is getting bigger.
It's getting bigger.
That was their catchphrase. Whereas here at Lloyd Center, the biggest mall in Oregon.
There you go.
But I don't think it is anymore, though, right?
No, it's probably not anymore. It's still a good mall. I can't talk bad about it because I think a lot of people that my listeners still go there. I don't want them to hate me for it, but I like the outdoor malls.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't like being trapped in a building, and you know, so I like going to the outdoors.
What do you think's
gonna
happen? A diehard situation? Why are you afraid of being trapped in a building?
No, I just like
go in and get your slacks and get out.
Go
there, maybe do a lap around the ring and the rink. Called it the ring. That's a
started putting ice rinks in malls?
I only know of one. There's one in
Lloyd Center here.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one.
The great Tanya Harding once trained.
Yeah, that's.
And then she went out and started training to throw hubcaps. So it all worked out.
Jimmy Pardo is in studio with us. He is at Helium tonight, 7:30 and 10. Get tickets at heliumcomedy.com. I love Helium. My wife and I will go there on a date night. We like to laugh. I don't like to sit in the front row. I'm not a front row sitter.
All right.
Do you, when you do shows, do you see the same people who come and sit in the front row?
Do I?
Yeah.
I do, because what I do, it's the same, you know, I improvise with the crowd quite a bit. So I get people that sit up front because they want to be Pardo'd. They want me to say do all the four jokes I have at their expense. They look forward to it. And last night, I thought there was a guy in the front row, as a matter of fact. I thought he sat there wanting to be Pardo'd, and he did not.
Yeah.
He did not care for my antics.
Yeah, I'm on enough here. I don't need to be part of the show.
You know I'm the same way. I went to see Don Rickles many, many years ago, obviously when he was still alive, and I was in the second row, and he came out, and he was doing a bit with my wife and I, and I just was a person. I get enough laughs. I don't need to try to get bigger laughs than Don Rickles. I was the prop he needed me to be. You know, he kicked me out, and then you try to come back, and then because they actually guide you, now head back to your seat. And I told you to get out of here. Yeah. And he yells again, and you go along with it. Whereas some guys try to be funny in that scene. It's let him. He's going to do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And again, just like you, I get enough laughs on my own show.
You grew up in Chicago.
Chicago, yeah, South Side, and then eventually the South Suburbs.
And then, so how does like Chicago comedy different than the comics who grew up going into the clubs in L.A.? If you're going to like in the Chicago comedy scene,
boy, that's interesting. You know, because I started in the boom, and so there was comedy clubs everywhere. And you were able to fail in a vacuum, you know, in a void. Nobody got to see. If you bombed, you bombed. Nobody cared. I think starting in L.A. would be tough because, especially in the late 80s, early 90s, when everybody was getting development deals and industry was all out watching and looking for the new hot talent. And if you have a bad set, that could reflect on you for years. Like, oh, I saw that guy. That guy bombed one night. Whereas I was able to bomb and nobody
was there.
Yeah. And make no mistake, I bombed.
Do the comics know when there's somebody in the crowd that...
Yes,
that,
and everybody tenses up and panics. It's really bizarre. It would be so great if they just came in unannounced and sat in the back. But yeah, it's always a, you know, hey, the guy from Fox is here today. So you may want to...
Yeah.
You know, and then you tighten up a little bit.
Because when you're at the right pitch, what is that? Like... Because you're not lazily going through the routine. Like, you have to have some energy. You have to have some focus. Yeah. But you don't want too much of that.
Exactly. And you want to be free. You want your brain to not be thinking about, hey, this set can change my life. This set can, you know, I mean, there, you know, for years when I was doing sets to try to get on The Tonight Show, I wouldn't really have good sets. And then inevitably, I did not have a good set on The Tonight Show. So it all worked out. But it's, you want to be able to be free and not panic about doing that set.
When you were part of The Tonight Show, that you were warming up the audience before Conan
for
was
Conan,
coming out,
yeah.
Right? So what is that warm-up like? How long was that set?
The Tonight Show, when we were there for the 7 months, and then Jay Leno wanted his job back, so we all got fired.
By the way, I love Conan.
As you should.
Yeah, he's good.
Funniest guy on late night.
He is good.
You know, and Jay Leno and I was talking about his car.
Yeah.
There's a carburetor. Yeah, these headlines are going to read themselves. Good guy. That was very easy. That was literally 8 minutes. I would go out for 8 minutes and get the crowd focused, and then now it's time for the Tonight Show, and then I was done.
Yeah.
When we moved over to TBS, it was a little looser. I started with eight because that's what we were doing at the Tonight Show. Then it went to like 12 to 16. I think it ended up being 22 minutes by the time I left. But that was because, hey, you know what? They're already here. Brought the crowd in.
Yeah.
I'm here. And they even came to me. They said, do you want to go out? I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
So I would arrive at 4. At 4:08, I would go on. At 4:30, I would introduce the band. Then the band would play a couple songs. Boom, showtime.
I am one of these people where I'm on noon to 3, and so I want my energy to be right at noon to 3. And so I can feel like I've kind of managed myself. Like, I'm not a gym in the morning guy, right? My energy's better in the midday into the afternoon. Are you one of those people, because you're normally performing at night, like when you have to perform at 4 o'clock, can you fool yourself into thinking it's 7:30 and
I do this. I've got a podcast called Never Not Funny, which people seem to enjoy, and we record that at 11 o'clock in the morning. So I've kind of adjusted to where it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
I can be a clown any time of day. I can put the nose on and squeak my shoes, whatever you need me to do.
The act, how much will Portland be in the act? Do you wander around and pick up material as you're here?
I don't know. That's a great question. I guess overall, maybe something will sneak in, or I'll make a reference. You know, last night, Hair Buns and Scooters got involved. So, which I believe isn't that your competition on the other station?
Yeah,
Hair Buns and Scooters.
That's it. By the way, what's with the scooters? They're all over the place. Is this everywhere you go?
It's everywhere. It's L.A. They just, you know, it's like just one day there's no scooters. The next morning there's 1,000 scooters everywhere.
Yeah,
it's almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, except we're all being turned into scooters.
I saw the guy picking them up one morning, and he's dropping them off. I guess
right.
He must have had them overnight, and I don't know what he's doing. Charging?
I think they charge them, and then they bring them, and they put them in various locations.
Yeah.
Because you could just drop them wherever you want. You could drive it for a minute or 6 hours.
Why didn't we think of that?
Because we're not smart guys.
Yeah, because that would have been, that's a big industry. And people are riding them on the sidewalks. I don't know how safe it is, but it, you know.
How long has it been happening here?
I think it's recent. Like, Bobby would probably know better than
Bobby!
I. Bobby! How long have the scooters been around? Alabama Adriana. Bobby.
It's been within the past, like, 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, they just started.
Just happened.
They just started.
Weeks. Like, the aliens just arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been maybe 3 months for us in L.A., and there's already, of course, controversy. People are getting hit by cars, and because there's a weird, you're not a pedestrian, you're not a car, so you think you have your own rules, and it's like, well, pick one of them.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you're going to get, obviously they're going to get hit.
Yeah, I heard somebody driving him say, hey, the motorist rules don't apply. We can drive these on the sidewalk as they're whizzing by me, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, I think eventually they'll find some sort of, again, I am not a city planner. I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, you should be.
You really think that's what I should do?
In Portland. In Portland. We need some politicians here.
So you think I should stay in comedy elsewhere, but here in Portland, I should come and run the city.
You're a serious guy.
Okay, I'm in. I'm in. I'm happy to do it. My Lloyd Center credentials certainly will get me far.
Jimmy Pardo is with us in studio. Helium Comedy Club tonight, 7:30 and 10. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. Two shows, heliumcomedy.com to get tickets. Your wife's in show business. She's a writer. Is
My wife
right?
is a comedy writer, yes.
Yeah.
She's had the pleasure of writing. She writes on award shows, and she wrote for Joan Rivers for a little while.
Is that how you met her? Were you like in the comedy circle? Or?
You know what? We had the same manager, or at the time, I'm sorry, the same agent at the time. And I met her at a mutual friend's birthday party. We've been together 20 years.
Does it help if you have somebody who understands the business as you're business?
In my case, 100%. You know, she grew up in show business. Her dad was in movies and television and had great success and great notoriety. And so and her brother was as well. And her whole family basically was in show business. And I was already an established comic when we met, and she was an up and coming comic and then ended up going into writing. So we never competed, but we were able to talk about without bitterness or anything about, you know, hey, I'm gone for 3 days doing this. She understands it. Hey, I'm going to have to, like in her case, hey, I got to write from 8 a.m. I might not get home till midnight.
Mm-hmm.
We understand each other. Whereas I think if one of us was a layperson, it might be difficult.
Do you have bits that you'll run by her and say, hey, is this funny, or how can I make it better?
Just did it yesterday. Yeah. I improvised something on stage last night, as a matter of fact, and I told her it, and she said, if I may, you know, I know she always makes fun. If I may, I know you're the great Jimmy Pardo, but I think this, and it was, and I went, yes, that's 100 times better.
Yeah.
And, so, yes, it's nice to have that.
That's a real asset, like, you know, to have a muse, you know, so to speak.
And she's the greatest. She's funny, and we have a 10-year-old son who's about to turn 11, and he's going to be funnier than either of us and carry us. And because I've got, as I say, I got 3 or 4 months tops in this business before I
that's it,
find a scooter and find a semi to run it into.
Yeah, what are you going to do when you grow up? That's the
question. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be the guy in the back of a tram at Disney going, don't forget, you parked in Goofy. Don't forget your keys and sunglasses. You parked in Goofy. That's going to be my job.
You mentioned your wife being in showbiz and her dad being an actor and brother. You know, I'm always fascinated by those families because that's a weird industry.
Well, her father was Chekhov on Star Trek.
Mm.
And so he's an icon. He's not even just a working actor.
That's right. I recognize
him. He's a guy who, you know, he's got his hands at the man's Chinese. He's got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. So he's a guy that everybody knows and recognizes, and yet he's a guy that still wants to work. So it's and my brother-in-law, who's since passed away, he was Boner on Growing Pains.
Mm.
So he too had this iconic role for a certain demographic, certain age group. So it was interesting to be around that and to see, like, hey, you're famous and you're on posters and this and that and the other, but you still just want to work.
Yeah, but it must have been a positive thing because, like, he, you know, from the Star Trek cult, she must have had a positive association of what showbiz was, and her brother must have had a positive association because they stayed in the industry. No?
Yeah. I think so.
No?
But
you see some guys, like, dad's a coal miner, and dad tells the kids every day after work, don't be a coal miner, because he comes home and his face is covered in soot. And
right.
He's got black lung, but... You know, this guy had kids who went into the business. And
I think if you're around it, and, you know, they're also, they're very talented. I think that plays into it as well. Yeah. And I think you're right. I mean, I don't know. As my wife says, you know, she was there for the lean years of the Star Trek canon. So I'm not 100% sure why, other than
it's
in your
bones. Hang out with, like, William Shatner and
Nimoy, Bill's a good guy,
and all these people? No.
They all, I'll say this, all of the Star Trek people were invited to my wedding, with the exception of one.
Really?
Yeah, you decide which one that was.
Interesting.
Nichelle was there, George Takei was there, and Yeah, it's weird because I was never a Trekkie. It was to me, it was just I'm meeting my girlfriend's dad, and oh, what a coincidence! His hands are in front of a theater. You know, it's like it's bizarre.
That's really cool. Jimmy Pardo is with us. You should see him tonight or tomorrow night at Helium Comedy Club, 7:30 and 10 o'clock shows. It's a good date. I can vouch by that. Go to heliumcomedy.com for tickets. Before I cut you loose, politics has become a real issue in sports with the protesting, and I get a lot of listeners who say, I don't want to hear about politics. Do you have to be mindful of that in a comedy setting?
Yeah, it's been weird. It's been, you kind of don't know. You know, I was in Buffalo recently, which I was told the club is in a pretty liberal area. And I said some pretty innocuous stuff about Trump, like not even mean. And they shut down on me. They just hear it.
Because you're going to lose the audience.
I did for a few minutes in Buffalo. And in my younger days, it probably would have rattled me. Instead, it was like, you know, just get through this. And, you know, they maybe they're just all realizing they made a huge mistake. Yeah. And they're quiet now because they feel the fool.
Yeah, because it used to be you could go to sports and comedy and you could have political discussions that weren't, like, heavy. But now it's everywhere. And
it's, right? I mean, that's everybody's Twitter feed. It's whatever on everybody's mind. I mean, if you say to somebody, how you doing today? Well, good. You see what he said today? Yeah. Like, it's literally, that's the start of every conversation.
Yeah.
And no matter what side you're on, and, you know, you can spin it. You see what he said today? You're darn right. Well, we're going to postpone that parade.
Yeah.
It's like, well, figure out why we're postponing it.
I had a guy yesterday who told me, he says, it's changed the way he thinks when he sees a pickup truck with an American flag on it. He used to think, that guy's a patriot. And now he goes, that guy's a racist.
100%.
Like, you know, I don't disagree. It's just from what's out
there. It's weird, right?
Yeah.
It's that's an interesting way to put it. And certainly when I see a guy in a hood, I think different things these days. So, you know, it used to just be a hood. That guy's in a Halloween costume. Now I know he's a racist.
Now you know it. You got it. Jimmy Pardo, Helium Comedy Club, tonight, 7:30 and 10. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. HeliumComedy.com. Buy tickets. I will see you there. Jimmy, thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for coming in. Just had a really interesting conversation with the comedians as they left here. And do you remember the guy we had in studio, Bobby, a couple weeks ago? Comedian we had in here, Bobby Lee?
Yes.
Asian guy, actor, best known as being a cast member on Mad TV. I went out to see his show at Helium. And he was really funny for about 90% of his act. And then at the end of his act, he did something that was completely outrageous. So he was really funny. He was his jokes were smart. He was really good. And then in the last 10 minutes of his act, he resorted to physical comedy that wasn't funny. Like, he did a lap dance. He took his clothes off. He did a lap dance on a male member of the audience while he was wearing, like, a thong underwear. And it was, like, the lowest form of comedy. And my wife and I left the show kind of shaking our heads. People were not, like, really laughing. They were more gasping when he did that. And there might be a faction of his audience that likes the outrageous humor. But it felt like it was, like, a resorting to the lowest form of comedy. Lowest, like, I've got to basically strip down to underwear and mock myself in order to get a laugh comedy. And I had the conversation, because the comics all know each other, with Jimmy Pardo as he left here. And he was like, you know, that's the stuff people used to come and watch him for. I don't think he needs that stuff anymore. And I go, I know. I go, can you tell him? Not that I'm a comedy expert, but the dude didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't need to strip down and be in his skivvies.
Yeah, I didn't know his background or his comedy sketches background or anything like that. And that surprised me, because he was really good on the show. He was excellent.
He's smart, and he's funny. And the comedians all hang out together. So Jimmy Pardo, who was here, was saying he hangs out with Bobby Lee, and he tells him, you're really funny, like, just hanging out with you. That's the acting you need to do. And I said, I 100% back that up. Because What I think happens is, I think these guys are all deeply insecure. Like, they are because they're on stage. They are because you come into comedy and that's what you are. Like, you're told over and over you're not funny. And the vast majority of the audience isn't laughing. Like, you walk in, and your goal is to make people laugh, but you got to look around during those things. And I kind of look around and I go, you know, about a third of the audience is really laughing. The rest of the audience is saying, nah, you got to do more to win me over. So I just wonder, as a comedian, do you escalate and escalate and escalate until the point, like, you're going, I'm going to take off my clothes, go down to like a thong, and do a lap dance on a dude that I picked out of the audience. He picked the burliest, biggest bearded dude out of the audience that he could find. And he brought him up and he made him sit in a chair while he did a lap dance on him. And I said, he didn't need to do that. That was like jumping the shark for me.
Yeah. Performers, you know, that's they want some, obviously it's a little bit of shock value, but also it's that, you know, you're not, I'm trying to improve and I need you to look at me and see what I'm doing. And yeah. I'm going to do something to make you shocked.
Yeah.
And because I can.
I wish that I could have had a moment with Bobby Lee after the show, because I would have said, you know what? You're better than that. You didn't need to do that. You just cheapened yourself. And that's what everybody here is leaving thinking about, instead of thinking about what a great comedian you were. And I think it's holding you back. But there might have been a faction of the audience. I could be totally wrong. There might have been a faction of the audience that knows him from back in the day where he used to do all that stuff, where it just comes and says, you know what, that's what I come to see.
But you know what people do? They do it in politics. They do it in social life. Who do you hang out with? Not you, but most people, they hang around the people they're most comfortable with. The people that are going to tell them everything's great. You're funny. All's good. You know, that's why you don't get these outside opinions, because nobody accepts them, or they don't understand what's going outwardly. Or somebody like you sees the end of a show, goes, that didn't work. Somebody's not giving him the right. They're feeding him stuff.
I'll give him that feedback next time he comes on here. I will tell him, you didn't need to do that. You're funny without it. You didn't need to do it. You cheapened yourself, and the last 5 minutes of your act was lame. Like, you know, the rest of it was really good.
People need to hear that. You ask me all the time, you know, am I good? Is this good? Does it work? Yeah, does it work?
Yeah. That's what I want to know. Like, I know not everyone's going to enjoy every bit, but this show has, over 11, 12 years, has refined itself over and over and over again, to the point where the benchmarks of the show, Punch It Audio, the 2 at 2, the Big Splash, those kinds of things have been simplified and refined and refined and refined, and we found what works best for us producing the show, where we can get the most timely audio in the best possible way, and so we're literally getting it in real time, where if a coach is saying something anywhere in the country in real time, I'm trying to get that audio, you know, have it available in the most efficient way. And that's what we do here, because the other thing is, I want to have good discussions. I want to have good guests. It's why we have multiple people booking the show that have different jobs. And I love the input from the listeners as well, because sometimes this show takes a turn. And sometimes it turns right. Sometimes it turns left. Sometimes it turns some variation of right and left and goes both ways. But like, you know, even on Twitter right now, and you can tweet at me at John Canzano BFT, a guy in Coos Bay who's listening to the show and apparently works in a shipyard has sent me a giant photograph of a ship. Like, that made my day earlier in the program, because I said, hey, follow me on Twitter if you want to be in the running for Ducks tickets or Beavers tickets, because I'm going to give them away this season. And this guy on Twitter said, hey, I'm down here, I'm working, I'm listening to the show, I love the show in Coos Bay. By the way, here's a picture of a ship. Like, do that. Like, that makes my day. Also, on Twitter, I was asking earlier in the program for the one name people out there, Madonna, Oprah, LeBron, who's identified, Aretha Franklin, Aretha. I mean, you know what I was talking about. And people said, I'm ashamed of you guys that nobody mentioned Prince. And another guy said, Ichiro. Like, that's, you know, it's rich. Tyler on Twitter says, hey, you just nailed it regarding Coach Leavitt looking for a head coaching gig. Oregon needs to make him the highest paid defensive coordinator in the country after this year. There are very few elite defensive minds in college football, and he's one of them. I'll go one further, Tyler. It's going to take more than money to keep Jim Leavitt. You're going to have to make Jim Leavitt feel like he's a co-head coach. And Mario Cristobal, that is going to take a big lift from Mario Cristobal
to allow Levitt to do a lot of interviews, allow Levitt to become a face, allow Levitt to have total autonomy on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, it's going to take a lot of, like, it's a hard enough thing being in a relationship. We all know it. If you've been in a relationship, if you've been had a girlfriend or boyfriend, if you've been married, you know it's a hard enough thing to be in a relationship. Like, it's a hard enough thing to have to think about other people. Then you have kids and you got to think about all of them. All right? And I can't imagine being a head coach in a college football program. And I said this to Cristobal just the other day when we had him on the show. And you know, I've been thinking about this Levitt thing for days. And I've kept it to myself. But I had somebody tell me that they don't believe Levitt's happy. Now, Levitt hasn't said that. Nobody said that. I haven't observed that myself, but it makes sense to me that Jim Levitt wouldn't be happy because he just found out Kansas State, that window's not open for him. And he might have been hoping, hey, in a year, I'll go be K-State's head coach. And, you know, he's come out and said he wants to be a head coach. But so I started thinking about Levitt, kept it to myself, but I asked Cristobal a question the other day that really was about Levitt. And I asked him, I can't imagine you've got a locker room you have to manage of locker room personalities. Then on top of that, you also have to manage a coaching staff because you're in charge of a staff. And I think from his answer, he knew that I was talking about Levitt. I think he knew because his answer was very diplomatic in which he said, you know, hey, I don't really think about that too much, but, you know, kind of like I hire the right people and I put them in the right spots. But that's not what I was talking about. I was saying, like, it goes beyond him hiring Jim Levitt because he really didn't bring Jim Levitt in. Oregon did. And Jim Levitt wasn't Oregon's first choice for defensive coordinator when they hired Willie Taggart. They wanted Justin Wilcox as the defensive coordinator. Now, he ended up at Cal as the head coach. So Jim Levitt came in because they said, Chris, you know, it was a smart thing by Oregon. Oregon hired Taggart, who brought Cristobal. Then they said, we got to put a really good defensive coach with him, and we got to overpay for this guy. So they went out, and they overpaid for him. And now comes the challenge, right? It's like Oregon's dating a supermodel on the defensive side of the ball, if I can compare Jim Levitt to a supermodel. They're going to have to keep her happy now, you know? They've got her. Now they got to keep her happy.
Why can't you just enjoy her for the little time that you're going to have her?
Leave it right here. You got the bald face.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.